Reggie.
And I am Brian.
Oh.
And this is R&B Talks.
Welcome to Fall Edition.
I know. Sort of. It's coffee time, ladies and October. Gentlemen. The coffee's back.
I'm back from vacation. Vacation suck balls, but here we are.
Reggie, you're the only person I know go on vacation and come back and not have at all enjoyed vacation.
Here's the thing. Okay, here's the thing about vacation, right? I've spent so much time and effort into making my freaking castle my kingdom, you know?
Yeah.
And like, this is how I want it. This. So when you go away, like, it's just like,
Yeah, but you got to go places that are cool to you, right? Like, to me, going to the beach, if I go to the beach, I do that for the kids. I don't do that for me.
I know. And that's, I guess that was a problem this time because the beach was just not success. Like, we're so much seaweed and stuff in the water. You just,
cause the hurricanes was happening.
Yeah. The kids didn't want to go out there. So we just spent a lot of time at a pool and it's like, you know, and then that in itself isn't really too bad. They had this little tiki bar where you could get drinks, but I'm not like drinking a lot. And then they had this little bitty shack of a, you know, food place that was uber, like obviously way expensive, but it was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you can't like, if you're not really a drinker and you can't get really good food and you're just hanging out at a pool, it's kind of.
If I'm going on vacation, I want to go someplace I've never been before.
Well, the girls haven't been. That's the thing. I've been a lot. I can't really do that too much. I mean, not well, I say that, but it's I'm going with the girls for them to see Florida. That's where we went to see the coast and all that stuff.
To visit the Floridians. Florida man.
Went to Bucky's. Bucky's was cool.
Did anybody try to eat your face off in Florida?
No.
Because Florida man's down there. I don't care who he is.
But here you know, it was probably one of the coolest things though. We went to the Naval Aviation Museum that's down there in Pensacola.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that is flipping cool as all get out.
Yeah.
Now, the coolest part about it though was the veterans walking around
mm-hmm.
that are sitting there asking you about stuff and you know, they, dude, mad props, man. They got just, you know, I don't even know what half these patches mean, but you're just like, you look at it and go, dude, you did some.
Yeah, you win.
You did some things.
You win the thing.
Yeah, you know, and I went to this one guy, and he literally didn't have a space on his jacket. There was no space left on the jacket. I'm like, bro, you got balls of steel, man.
Somebody went out there and did it all. Like he was like, I'm going to retire. I did it all.
No. And then they had a 101-year-old World War II veteran named Cash Barber. He was sitting there in his little wheelchair below the plane he was flying.
Really?
Yeah. So his plane,
would be cool.
Plane is in there hanging up. Right. And it was a rescue kind of plane, I think. Yeah. And he was the navigator. And so he's good sitting there telling stories and stuff.
Good for him.
And you know, so the girls and we sat there, I don't know how long, but we did until he like stopped talking. For a minute, and then we were like, "Okay, I guess we should go." It was cool listening to his stories and stuff, and that kind of thing. And you know. So anyway, it was all right. I you know, the people were fine. I will say that if we go back to that area, we stayed in Perdido Key, Florida.
Perdido,
and it was okay, but I think we'd go down to Orange Beach, Alabama. That was seemed to be where we kept driving to all the time to go do things.
Well, I'll be honest with you. When the last time I took the family on a vacation to Florida, we stayed on the Floribama line, right? Like right where, because that whole strip is all the cool, fun stuff.
That's it.
And that's where we kind of hung out.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The Alabama side, though, you know, seemed like we went there more than anything.
Yeah, we had like tons of good restaurants on that side and all that stuff. But
we saw dolphins, you know, but like you know, the thing about going to see the dolphin cruise is you're on this boat and, you know, it's not like the dolphins are it's not like you're like sitting there and you're petting them. Like they're like, you know, they come up a little bit. We did see one that was feeding against this flood wall. That was kind of cool. He was batting the fish against the wall, catching it. And stuff. That was cool. But I mean, you know, after a while you see all these dolphins come up. You're like, all right, that's a dolphin.
Yeah.
You know,
but coolest thing I've ever seen is a whale.
Yeah, the whales were awesome.
That was cool.
When I went, I was in the Cape. And I did it a couple of times to go do see the humpbacks and stuff. The
whale watching thing.
Yeah, and you'd go, you know, you go on those boats and it'd be like the humpback's bigger than your boat.
Yeah.
You don't even realize it. And it's like, oh, there's a humpback coming in. So you're like looking and if the, you know, and they're like right here and it's getting so big. You're like, are they that? What? And all of a sudden they're like, you know, size of the boat going right underneath your boat.
Yes.
You're like, holy cow, that
hope thing. This thing doesn't hit the boat.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. But anyway, it's cool. We went to Bucky's. Bucky's was cool. I got spent way too much money. The brisket was good. I got hats off to them, dude, to cook that brisket like that.
Isn't that a shocker?
It's just
like, I mean, like when we went into Bucky's, I was like, I'm gonna get the brisket, but I'm gonna be disappointed. I was not disappointed. It was very good.
On the way back, dude, so because I'm trying to be good. I wasn't, but I was trying to be good on the way back. And it was like, so I got like three things of the sliced brisket to eat on the way back home, you know, but, and that's pretty much all I ate pretty much, but, you know, it was cool.
Well, I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about something happened while you were vacating.
It wasn't wow. That was before we left.
Well, yeah.
But we didn't do an episode, you know, since then, but we got to.
We lost somebody, man. A legend. I contemplate on him and all the things that I've learned and all the times I've listened to him. And man, losing Vadi Bakum was probably one of the biggest losses to spiritual culture, to Christian spiritual culture in the last 50
well,
years.
Well, I mean, as far as Christian influencers go, yeah, that are trying to stay biblically centered and teach the right text and
yes,
interpretations and stuff. He was, I mean, really, really
unmatched.
I
put the loss of Vadi on the same level as Billy Graham and the rest of the
and
guys.
MacArthur.
They're just, and I think what the, you know, if you take the kind of a retrospective look at Billy Graham and John MacArthur and Vadi Bakum, three completely different approaches to biblical culture, all very relevant, all very true, all great men, but completely different as how they approached it, how they taught, how they provided. And I tell you what, I feel like is being screamed for right now, and especially because actually, if you look at Christian culture, the young men are flocking back to the church. We need more charismatic leaders like MacArthur, like Vadi, like Billy Graham. I think what happened, and I'm looking at it overall, and this is part of the being introspective about all this, is we got into this rhythm where the church was sort of weakened by culture. And there's a bounce back happening. But during the weakening of the church, the Western church, we kind of fell into this ho-hum, like rhythmic doing the same thing over and over again. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, everybody pray, you know, the same rhythm, right? Well, I feel like Vadi was one of the ones that was bringing us out of that, who was passionate and very, very lovingly aggressive about how he approached. He would give me cold chills when he would get into a sermon. He would get so passionate about the subject that it would give me chills, man. I'd get goosebumps listening to him, dude. And we need more charismatic spiritual leadership like that.
He was just young. He was young, man. 58 or something like that.
I mean, he's only 8 years older than me.
Yeah, I mean, but he had heart problems. Like he had that big heart open heart surgery back a few years ago. That was kind of a scare and everything. So, I mean, if you followed him closely, you didn't know all these details. I mean, obviously, I don't know him personally, but you knew that he had some
serious health issues. There were some issues.
Yeah, and he had said that before. So, you know, it's not like it's completely off guard when you hear that, but you're just like, dang, man, that was whoo.
Well, but even greater, and this speaks out very strongly. I have met so many men who, and look, I'm not trying to tell anybody that a medical emergency or a medical catastrophe can't put you in a bad place, right? But I have seen so many strong Christian men have like a heart attack or a stroke and then recover and soften in their approach to the biblical truth because they're scared. Vadi did not. If anything, that man went harder to the paint.
Well, let's consider this, what he was doing. All right. He obviously was a black man. And so what he did was he spoke to those issues currently. He was one of the ones that I looked to and that was very clear about race didn't exist, that that was a construct that we created as humans, that, you know, there's the critical race theory and all this stuff. He was very much told the truth about
transgenderism.
All these things. He was really present during these critical issues, and he was very verbose and detailed about, you know, and
took them on.
Now, what I appreciated about Boddy too was that he wasn't a debater kind of guy. Him out there doing. Now, there's time and place for that, but we seem to be run rampant with bad debates and just, you know.
Although he did have a very spirited, I'll call it a conversation with Ben Shapiro appreciated.
I love that. That was fantastic.
It wasn't a debate so much as it was just two people from different cultural backgrounds getting together to talk about current events and topics. And I think that was, but he did a very good job in that conversation.
Well, so if you haven't read, he's got Fault Lines, which is a book that is fantastic. And it's a sociological Christian book that is really cool. Vody's got a few books out there that I really encourage everybody to read, but a lot of sermons he's got, it's all on YouTube.
Oh, dude.
You know,
if you guys want to hear how a true passionate carrier of the word expounds on it, I encourage you to go look up Vody Bachum. Don't look it for a particular sermon. Just look up Vody Bachum sermons and listen to how passionate and how powerful and how convicted he is. And that if you don't feel something from that, I'm not sure that you're human. Like that's the truth. Like whether you loved him or hated him, you had to stand in front of him and admire the conviction he had.
Well, I mean, you know, I think when you're effective, you have to be passionate and convincing, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't think there's any way about it that you're not going to be effective unless you are. Charlie Kirk, one of the reasons why he was so effective was so passionate, and that's what he, dude.
That's right.
You know, John MacArthur, he stood, how many years? 60 years doing, you know, church leadership and doing it right.
Yeah.
And
Billy Graham.
I mean, there's so many of them, though. I mean, like even Joe Schmo, who's right around the corner, who's been living in this, you know, taking care of his family and all that kind of stuff. I mean, look, at the end of the day, what we do here is just a blink, and then we're going off to heaven, and we'll be with God in his kingdom and do something there.
Yeah. Question, though, something, you know, kind of a relevant question in all this. You know, do you think that the lack of impassioned representatives for leadership of the church, do you think it's systemic and kind of across the board, or is it just a cultural thing where we are not so much, we don't want to seem over aggressive as we want two people to come in. Yes, you're welcome. Right. Or is it more a systemic thing caused by the virus of culture that's kind of leaked into the church over the last 10 years? I know that's kind of I think you get the question. I might be asking it wonky, but
I don't know. What are you asking?
I'm asking,
like, I got some of it.
Like when we go to church, you and I have been to several churches together.
Like how churches are evangelizing.
And we see a dispassionate preacher. They're up there. They're just bomb, bomb, bomb. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we see it a lot. We see it a lot. Do you think that that is a systemic thing caused by culture bleeding into the church over the last 10, 20 years? Or do you think that is more of a attack that's been taken on by the current version of the church to not seem as aggressive?
No, I don't think it's either. I don't really think I think it's a combination of a bunch of things, but, and that could be all kinds of, there's a lot of variables there. Let me answer that. Let me say this, though. Sometimes that's because there was a vacuum of leadership and there was no one else to step up.
Yeah.
And it would just happen to be this
that makes
person.
Sense. That makes a lot of sense.
That's a lot. There's a lot of that, right? I mean, you see, especially like you talk about in our area where we have a lot of, I mean, dude, we have a lot of churches. And I'm not saying there's like a lot of bad churches, but, you know, a lot of them don't have great speakers or researchers or theologians or something leading that. They're just a person that stepped up to just take on that job, right? So, you know, there's that. I will say that you get into a different scenario when you talk about churches who are led wrong and, you know, it's a dispassionate preacher who's got heretical views. That's a whole different thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, if you're just talking about Joe Schmo's church, who's just has been there for 40 years, but then, you know, sitting there, it's got Billy Bob as the pastor and is dispassionate. Well, he's really not called to be a pastor, but that's just who it was. And
that's
he's
just who got rolled up in the cause.
You
right?
know, I mean, there's a lot of that, dude, you know, for real. And I think a lot of times in our neck of the woods, we get, these bigger churches draw a certain amount of esteem and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you end up with a false comparison between a small church and a mega church. And so people will look at a small church pastor way more critically because of their experience at a mega church where they saw this, you know, obviously this guy probably making way over six figures speaking and doing all this stuff. Not saying he shouldn't. I'm just saying it's a different.
Well, but I also would look at the converse of that, which would be, you know, let's take, you know, and I want to be clear when I say this, I really like Kyle, but Kyle is more of a calm. He leads a huge church, but he has much more of a calm demeanor when he delivers a sermon, but he delivers it on a very high level of education and study.
But he's a researcher.
Like when you listen to Kyle,
Dude,
I feel like I'm in school. Like he's schooling me on some things, right? Like, well, yeah. Like on some very,
we're talking Kyle Eidelman.
Yeah. Right? And he's an amazing preacher. Like he really is. But in his style, leading the big church, he seems more like professorial, I would say.
Well, right? Keep in mind, Kyle is it's not like he's leading the administrative duties and stuff like that are left to other people, right?
But in the smaller church, the minister has to be the head of the elders board. Yep. He has to be a lot of the churches. He's the financial guy who's taking care of the money. He's the one taking care of all the, you know, so, but I just feel like I'm not looking for a leader. I don't really need to be led, right?
Well, we all need to be led.
We do, but my leader is God. My passion is for Christ,
but
right?
But there's still pastoral element to
things. I just wonder if we could just, for lack of a better term, if more ministers would just take the gloves off for a minute and be like, look, we're going to talk truth right now. And I'm going to tell you some things that are going to make you uncomfortable. And I'm going to tell you some things that are probably going to hurt your feelings. And are probably going to make you feel like I'm picking on you. But it's time for the truth to be told.
I get you. And I don't think that's not happening. I think that does happen.
It does happen. But does it happen as much as it should?
Well, I don't know. Like it happens at my church, right? I mean, Pete Baumgartel at Lanesville Christian is not afraid to do any of that. And he doesn't. He's pretty much shoots you straight pretty much the whole time, which I love about it.
And I think what frustrates me is when we see examples of they will remain nameless because I really don't feel like getting into it. But some of the guys that are out there with their bullhorns and their signs strapped to their back, and they're terrible examples of what a Christian is.
Yeah.
Terrible examples.
I hear you.
But you have to admire
their tenacity.
That the dude is—he's out there with his heels dug in, and he's going after it, right? Like he might be going after the wrong thing, but whatever it is, he's going after it.
Yeah, that never appealed to me, man. The whole street preacher thing
make any sense to me.
Never. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, or it's like, you know, it's just not. That's not my thing, right? I guess I'm just saying. But
anyway,
leaning into that though was your topic for today. And it's really about, I would say, like culture and manhood and living in service as a man versus culturally the ideas of that. And
well, let me also tell you kind of where the inspiration came from.
Tell me, Ryan. Tell me now.
I was as we know, I was trying to come up with this game show type thing.
I let you go.
And it train wrecked on me because I am not technically savvy. Anyway, but I was reading an article, and the article, it was not a Christian article, but it was an article on, it was called The Veil of Masculinity. And I thought it was interesting just because I thought this is probably going to be a bunch of crap. But anyway, and it was a bunch of crap. But what it made me start to think about was, culturally, do we recognize that masculinity in its purest form is not aggressive? It is not hateful. It's not judgmental. Masculinity, biblically, is about service. And I don't think, I wonder if the skew in everyone's view, I'm gonna bring it up once, but that's just because I have to lead toxic masculinity, which is the biggest garbage phrase on the planet.
I know.
There's just toxic people, and true masculinity, we serve our families, we serve our community, we serve our jobs, we work with joy as God calls us to do, right? We do all these things and we get tired. Don't get me wrong, dude. If you're a man and you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing as a masculine head of your household, you're going to be tired. There are going to be times where you're going to feel like you're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders, but you're also going to have a very commonplace understanding that that is the role that God put you in. And that is what God wants from you, is to be a servant. And at the heart of masculinity is the servant's heart, right? At the core of masculinity is the servant's heart. And I feel like there's been so much fog of garbage that's been pushed out about how men are toxic and we're bad and we're the problem and we're the reason. I felt like I just wanted to talk about what the real example of actual biblical masculinity is, versus this false tag that we've been given, and how biblical masculinity can serve us culturally. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, when I saw this, the one thing I tried to find, which actually took me longer than I thought, was when I've read in places about the male role being undermined or suppressed in civilizations, and that usually leads to the downfall of the civilization. Mm-hmm. This has been heard a lot, and read, and I couldn't remember specifically where I picked this up from that was important. And let me clarify this and say that I'm not saying that this is legitimately a completely sourced and evidential conclusion but there is. It's not like it's absent of that either, but there's been several times in philosophical and anthropological and historical talking about how and looking historically at civilizations that have collapsed, and they look at like the moral decay, gender dynamics, sexual norms, and society softening, and that and some of the conclusions that writers have come up with is that that was a major contributor to why the civilization failed, because the main male influence was then softened and everything else, and it ended up to a collapse. So I'm not saying that's necessarily the legit, like, not it's this is not, this is highly debated. It's not like it's something that everybody agree on, but. Here, give you an idea. Like in 1934, J.D. Unwin's Sex and Culture, and he did a study about with 86 societies and all this stuff. And he like said, basically, his conclusion was that societies flourish when they enforce that strict heterosexual monogamy, mm-hmm. family structure, premarital chastity, and traditional sexual norms, that leads to more cultural productivity, expansion, and cohesion. When that starts to decline is when the civil – and he did all these, you know, for all these societies. Now, like that's just one example. Sir John Gubbs, The Fate of Empires in Search for Survival, that he wrote in 1978, kind of says the effeminacy of men, the same kind of thing going through that. The whole thing about hard times create strong men mm-hmm. cycle that was popularized by G. Michael Hoff in 2016. And that's debatable though, that hard times create strong men create good times create weak men, and weak men create hard times. Mm-hmm. That's not totally inaccurate, but that's not how I would put it either. This whole idea, though, this is where I wanted to find where I could find this idea, because I think when you talk about this stuff, and especially when we talk about how we're made to be a service, we're not hateful, we're not violent necessarily. That's not true masculinity.
And don't get me wrong. I stand by the statement. I'd rather be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. So, but that doesn't mean I'm always looking to go to war.
No, right? Correct. But what I'm saying is, though, when we are suppressed and not able to serve as we should, that's when communities and societies, I think, get damaged and lead to the collapses and everything else. And I think enough of that is still surround in America is still around, mm-hmm. but boy, you have the elements that are fighting hard to get rid of it, you know? So when I was reading all your outline and everything for today, and I couldn't get that out of my head. Like, you know, it's in order to be of service and fulfill my role, like I can be, I'm countercultural. Period.
Well, but the Bible says we're going to be abnormal.
True.
We're going to be oddities.
And I think you got to look at, like, the, you know, you go back to the early, you know, 20th century, World War One, II era, Vietnam was kind of when it was tailing into the, you know, the 60s hippie crap that came around. Up until that, this kind of hippie area, I mean, you really had a culture of traditional gender roles. It was, you know, stuff like that. And we were thriving in what we were doing. And now you can, again, this is a complex issue. And I'm not saying that because this is why you can't like nail down causes for civilization collapse. Cause you got, you know, wars, you got economic things are going on, you know, global stuff, catastrophes. Yeah. But anyway, I guess the point is that since the 60s, though, we've been in this steady incline of this, you know, ramp to suppress masculinity, which is another reason why we're here talking to you all about all this stuff. And so I just think that that's a big part of it. I couldn't get that out of my head when we were talking about it, when I was reading your thing. So anyway, look, I think what I explain to me, Brian, like when you say, social media pushes alpha wolves or fragile snowflakes. And tell me what you mean by the scripture flips the script.
Very simple, my friend. I'm glad you asked that question. Well, number one, social media, unfortunately, plays on both sides of the fence. Because if you look, all right, so let's take Instagram for a second. And let's take how algorithms and things like that are calculated into it. Let's say you're a young man who's had sand kicked in your face and you want to get super strong and muscular. If I look up one time on Instagram, power muscle workout, I'm going to get flooded with videos of morons who are doing things that are dangerous, who are pushing a lifestyle forward of irresponsibility, doing things that may get you hurt. That alpha wolf, go hard till you're dead, right? Blah. That's just I'm sorry, but it's bullshit, man. I'm just going to say it. And then on the other side, if you're that guy who has been told all his life, well, you're just too aggressive, and you go on there and say, well, what is a society alpha male? Then you're going to get this big giant sack of crap. That's, well, you should be in touch with your feelings, and you should never, you know, try to impose your will, and you should never, you're not a leader. You should co-lead and blah, blah. No, that's not what we were called to do. But the perfect verse, and this is what's funny about this, as I was kind of studying and looking at biblical verses, I was going through all the regulars, right? Micah 6:8, Proverbs 27. I ran into Proverbs 24:5, 6. And I don't know why, but this one has never stuck out to me before. But it says, a wise man has strength. A man of knowledge increases power. So with wise guidance, you wage war. Mm-hmm. Now, the layperson could read that and go, what is he talking about waging war? What they're talking about is, I truly believe what they're trying to get at in this verse is, we have to have our spiritual armor on. The battles I'm going to wage most in my life are not against other men, are not against other genders, are not against other ideals. They're going to be biblical spiritual wars.
Principalities.
Principalities, baby. That's right.
Principalities.
And I think that that's a very true statement. You know, you're either an alpha wolf or you're a precious flower, whatever you want to call it. But we are called to fight on more than an earthly plane on a daily basis. We're called to fight on a spiritual plane. People don't seem to remember that when we get baptized, we become sons or daughters of the highest holy power. We are, God is our father. Christ is our brother. We are in the family. Well, guess what, dude? When you join the family, you're going to fight more than the battle with your neighbor over where the stakes go in your lawn.
Well, I mean,
you're going to fight battles of, you know, principalities trying to hurt your children, spiritual warfare for your wife, all the things that are going to go on that you have to stand and protect against. Because here's the truth of it, man, and I'm going to put it out there, and this is a hard thing for people to understand. And I think it's also very hard for old school traditional Christian men to understand. I can stand guard over my wife, but her relationship with Christ is her own, and she's going to have to fight her battles, and I can't fight those spiritual battles for her. I can pray for her. I can pray over her.
Give counsel.
I can give counsel. Yep. But at the end of the day, she's going to have to fight those battles. So go back to this verse. Read the end of it. So with wise guidance, you wage war. So we have to be men of wisdom and integrity in order to be really, truly masculine. It's not about who I can beat up or who I can hurt. It's about who I can help, who I can serve. Right? So I think that's kind of goes to that question you asked, right?
Well,
maybe I answered it right. Maybe I answered it wrong. I kind of feel like I hit it, but
it was kind of like a spaghetti when you think about it.
Yeah.
A little bit, but that's okay.
Turn on the lights and the cockroaches went everywhere.
but okay. Look, here's the deal. I think when you hit on something a little bit that I kind of want to emphasize a little bit more.
Lay it on me, bro.
There's a lot of times when we think there's a conflict that we need to address in a, because it's something that's got to be taken care of. But, and when necessarily it should be handled a little different in more of a Christ-like manner. And I mean by like, you know, your neighbor does something silly, right? Maybe, you know, runs over your tree or something. And instead of like, and I think a lot of times we think as men, oh, that's my, you know, but at the same token, it's your neighbor. And I think a lot of times we look at, I'm just pulling that as an example, by the way, that there's a lot of times when the battle's not with that neighbor.
Yeah.
But the battle's really your thought process towards that neighbor before anything happens.
Yeah. It's how right? it's the approach to the problem.
Yeah, you got to let yourself be in the Christ mindset before, and you pull yourself there instead of letting it spin into the uber alpha wolf type of nonsense.
Yeah,
and this is kind of also why I don't like that alpha wolf terminology anyway, because the way that alpha is in like for instance in Wolves Pack, they are not. Yes, they can be violent and they can be aggressive, but it's really select. I mean, like they're very specific.
But you also have to understand what do the wolves do?
Yeah.
They follow
They're protected.
When the parents are old, the children hunt for them. When the children are young, the parents protect. Everybody has, I think imagery has a lot to do with this.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think the word alpha is so often misused that I almost hate using it. And then I go back to a conversation where you and I had, we were staying on your front porch and you're like, I'm just not that guy anymore.
Right. I'm not.
I don't think it's that you're not being who you're supposed to be. I think as you and I have grown spiritually and become better men, we've now become to understand that we must approach with the Christ mindset. That means being tempered when you approach and saying, all right, I need to look at all angles of this. I need to make sure that I'm not misjudging this situation. And don't get me wrong. If you pose a threat, okay. But that's not normal.
That's not that. Well, right. It is switching from the tough guy mentality to the Christ-like servant attitude.
Absolutely.
That's what we were talking. That's what I was really referring to. Like I have no interest to be the tough guy anymore. I don't think there's a reason why I'm working out all the time and doing all this stuff. That isn't to be a tough guy though. That's really just to like try to take care of the temple, the meat suit that God gave me. Right.
The meat suit that God gave me.
Yeah. I mean, that's look,
ladies and gentlemen, that's going in the year in highlights.
I'm telling you. Meat suit, but look, that's what I'm doing. I mean, it's not about. I mean, and it was that thought process, like you know, the reason why I'm actually doing all this, taking care of myself and all this crap. I got young girls for one. I don't want to take all this other medication and all this other nonsense that can have all this other thing. I want to live the rest of my life well without being
broken.
I break myself every like you know people, and we've talked about this too. I mean, it's funny how people are like. Don't you feel so much better after you? No,
I don't.
I don't feel better at all. I'm in pain. I hurt all the flipping time. I mean,
that's part of it.
I know. But the attitude is, it's not like when I was in my 20s and like slinging the lid all the time. That was total being tough guy. I got to be buff, blah, blah, blah kind of thing, you know? And that was that mindset in earlier in my life. And as I've gotten older now, it's really not about that. It's like if I can't be healthy, then how can I serve in the capacity that God wants me to do? For one, how can I be? And that includes being husband and father to my own family and stewards of the things He gives me. I can't do that if I'm, you know, eating Cheetos on the couch and like taking shots of insulin or something like that.
Yep.
That's not how can I fulfill all those things I'm supposed to do? So I guess that's exactly where I'm going is like, I need to be able to take care of myself physically and everything else. I need to be able to protect my family. As much as that may happen or not, I don't want to do that. I guess that's the thing. No. Like I'm not looking for conflict. I don't want to get into a conflict anymore. I used to want to.
Yeah. I used to have that urge.
I don't anymore. I'm done with this. You know, it's like it's at this point in my life. I'm like, you know what? I'm good to chill. I'm good to be okay. Sure, I want to be in shape enough or physically able, but I don't need to be looking for it or whatever.
But I also don't want to discourage men from part of our responsibilities is when we see the lie. We have to recognize it and call it out. If you hear a wrong or you see a wrong, you have to be willing to stand up and go, no, that's not right. It doesn't mean you're going to go like you're going to draw swords and want to go to battle over it. But part of our responsibility as men, as men of faith, is when we see the devil working, we got to be like, whoa, that ain't what's supposed to be going on. Right. Like I've had many a situation and I'll be honest with you, man, where I've seen things going on inside the church and I'm like, dude, no, I heard somebody, this has been a while back, but a guy goes, he goes, you know, I only drink Monday through Friday. He goes, I'm usually drunk every night. He goes, but I just come in and pray for forgiveness and I'm cool. No. Brother, that's not the way that works.
That is not how that works.
Yeah, now, and that's not to say that we don't commit the same sin from time to time because we're not, I mean, smart is the best way to say it, but
weak.
Weak, yeah. But it doesn't mean that you just have permission to go on repeat and that the church is just the drive-through car wash you need every Sunday to clean yourself up so you can start again on Monday. That's not the way that works.
No.
There has to be some lever within you that says, I know I'm screwing up, so I have to try to change behaviors. So I do think that there's a responsibility for us as men to call out when we see the wrong. I just don't think we got to, you know, get out the Viking horn and, you know, start stabbing people. You just have to talk, right?
Yeah, but this is the thing. Like, at this point in my life, you know, you kind of, after you've lived through some things and you've gotten some experience, I look at people now when they're doing something silly, and it's not a roar, I need to, you know, go on defense. It's more like, oh, man, you just feel bad for them, you know? Yeah.
Just feel heartbroken for them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
But just to talk about, you know, just quickly, let me go over the tenets of Christian masculinity. Courage and strength. Love and self-control. Responsibility and leadership. Faith and integrity. And wisdom and instruction. Now, when I lay all of those out, when I put all those in a row and we talk about them, does any part of that sound aggressive? Or aggregate or angry? No, because it's not built to be. Right? Like, and don't get me wrong, you can go into the Bible and you can see where wars are fought and men had to die and blood was shed and all those things. But you can go into any history book and see that.
It's part of who you have been all along.
But when you focus on the Bible and you focus on the men of the Bible, Luke, Mark, John, David, all of these men, they were men after God's own heart. They held up not only the flawed part of ourselves to be seen, but they also held up biblical masculinity. Moses is a great example. Moses was very, you know, he was raised in anger when he came down off the mountain and saw them, you know, but he was also, you know, you look at how Moses handled himself within Egypt when he was attempting to free his people. He was never violent. He was loving, and he spoke truth, and he spoke truth to power, and he brought people to him with the love of Christ, right? There's no, like, when you look at these men of the Bible, when you look at Abraham and you look at, you know, Noah, these were men who, when they finally connected to that place where they were in line with God, they were great examples of what spiritual masculinity should be today. You know, a biblical masculinity should be.
But speaking of that, I mean, I think part of what we got to address, though, what's the difference between worldly and biblical masculinity? Because mm-hmm. that tells a story in itself about how, where our culture is and what the priorities are.
I think the main difference that I see is the worldly version of masculinity intentionally attempts to weaken the family structure. The biblical version of masculinity intentionally attempts to strengthen it. And that has a lot of tentacles out there, right? Like, I mean, let's just kind of think. I'm going to throw some things out there, and I don't get any hate for this, but these are just the things that are popping in my mind. Male feminists, right? That's just creepy, dude. You're just creepy. I'm sorry, but you're that's not natural. You're not doing the right thing.
What does that even mean, dude? You know what I mean?
You know, men who are lazy and require more from their wives than they require from themselves. There's all these tenets of, well, you know, I'm going to work hard and just let my husband live his best life. You're not letting him live his best life. You're actually letting him live his worst and weakest version of himself. And that's mired in all kinds of things. You know, the divorce rate being as high as it is, right? All these things are just tentacles that are just strangling out the family structure. That to me is the number one giant spotlight on why the difference between worldly masculinity and spiritual masculinity or biblical masculinity. Is biblical masculinity is built on the foundation of the family and marriage and bringing more generations into the world to be part of that structure where, you know, nowadays we're in the middle of a giant decline in population because people are like, well, we're never going to have kids and we're not going to get married. We're just going to live together and we're going to have civil ceremonies and all that. No, whatever, dude. Like, you know.
But I think you have two different versions of worldly masculinity, though.
Okay.
I think that's important to kind of throw out there.
Very true.
Like, you do have the, like, domineering, aggressive, more isolationist
douchebag masculinity is what I call it.
I mean you do have that,
and I don't even label that as masculinity. That's a bully covering up his weaknesses with a lot of noise
and then you have the other biblical or the other cultural masculinity is the subservient, very weak, and I say weak, not meek, weak, lazy, I don't know, any of those kind of terms you would say that. So you have these, there's a dichotomy between the culture and masculinity, right?
Absolutely.
And you got to understand that there's some of this uber stupid, you know, grunt like masculinity that gets confused with that's what biblical masculinity is. I think that's another one that we got to really acknowledge here that, you know, those. Not all the time. If you see some, I don't have any example off the top of my head because I don't even look at that crap, but, you know, some roided out dude who's, you know, throwing pictures of himself online or whatever and talking about how he dominates all these women and all this stuff and look at his sports card and all this crap. That is not the biblical idea of masculinity. Let's get that straight. And at the same token, some, you know, some quote unquote dude who can't figure out what bathroom to use and is very much looking to have a quote unquote partner, blah, blah, blah. That is also absolutely not that's the other total opposite way. The biblical masculinity, just put this in like real world perspective, is that you're strong both mentally and physically. You're wise, kind. And the biggest one that you've already pointed out is you are the antithesis of what selfish is.
Yeah.
Like, you're looking to just be the servant to, you know, your wife, your family, and your community, period. You're trying to do the best you can for all of those things, right? But number one, for God. You know, that's why I got that shirt for that Charlie Kirk used to wear, you know, God, family, you know, can't even think of it now because I'm
too many things. Brain fried.
Yeah. But anyway, look, that's the whole idea, right?
Yeah.
It's just to separate this out and to say, you know, there is strength in the biblical masculinity, but it does not necessarily align with the cultural idea of what is.
No, I will honestly say this, as I look at the tenets of biblical masculinity, none of them line up with culture.
No, it's leadership. It's not the same thing because we're not talking about domination. We're not talking about complete control or none of that stuff. It's more about responsibility and servant headship, I think, is the word that I've found in here.
Yeah.
The way the relationships are, the way you identify with yourself, all of those things are specific in a biblical mindset than it is in a cultural world. Like, your relationships are pointed up for one. Everything is rooted into the gospel. And from there, it flows out to not only your wife, but to your family and then to your community, but it flows up first, right? And your identity isn't rooted in what your occupation is, what, you know, how big your biceps are or whatever. It's rooted in who you are to God, period, right? And so those things just separate out the cultural and the worldly stuff for sure. And I do think that it absolutely has to do with just having a servant mindset, looking out for making you, you're trying to be the best man you can be to serve God and then your family, you know?
Yeah.
So moving on a little bit, cause I don't want to crash the server.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. So, since we did point out Vody Bakum, mm-hmm. and we talked about John MacArthur. So what are some things that they might say about biblical masculinity, Brian?
Well, Vody was all about being a servant. Like he very much spoke about a servant's heart. He very much spoke about, you know, not angering your children, you know, not doing the things that God calls us to do. Vody spoke very clearly about. You know, I do remember I listened to a sermon that he spoke about leadership in the home. And he made the statement that to lead in your home is to not stand in front with medals on your chest and honor from action. To lead in your home is to stand in front because God calls you there, and to lead through love and spiritual guidance in your home. And I thought that was very, very strong. And MacArthur was the same. MacArthur was about, you know, the leadership role being spiritually based. That's the thing that, and I'll be honest, I kind of struggle with that at times because that masculine part of me wants to be like, I got this. And a lot of times I'm like, no, I don't. So, but I think that they would say the very same thing. It's lead with love, patience, kindness, wisdom, listen, you know.
Well, here's one particular thing. I still remember this to this day. I still tell people about it. Vody has a specific sermon where he talked about how culture will look at the three B's, the bedroom, billfold, and the ball field.
Yep.
That's what they care about. Culture looks at those three things.
Yeah.
But that's not he. So he has a whole sermon on that.
Which is a great sermon, by the way.
Yeah. So I mean, look that up because it's fantastic. And I will say that the Act Like Men series that MacArthur did.
Yes.
Fantastic. That's also very good. So if you want to look at both of those things, that's very good. What was that?
What was what?
I wonder what that notification was. That was
I think
weird.
It was my weather notification.
Was it your
I think it was my weather notification.
Out of nowhere. All right.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, the Act Like Men is brilliant. I don't know. I completely lost my space. Oh, yeah.
It's okay. As you can tell, we're a little off tonight.
I am so off. Well, the thing that I think that we need to make sure we get across, though, is how do we apply what we're talking about here? Because we've said a lot about how what it isn't, what it's this, and culture says this, and biblical manhood says this. But what's really, I think we need to really talk about how do we apply this stuff?
Well, number one, pray for guidance. Everything in prayer, everything in to the Lord. So kind of what I do every day is as I'm preparing to leave and go off into my day and my wife and my kids are still asleep, I just ask God, I'm like, show me what you want me to see. Put in front of me who you want me to help. And give me the wisdom to recognize and do both. And I think that going into the world, we so often go into the world jaded and protected. I think we need to realize as Christians, we are spiritually covered. And we need to quit living in fear, especially as men. Look, here's the truth of it, guys. And this is a very hard truth that I'm going to roll out here on the table. And I know a lot of Christian men I've talked to struggle with this truth. The fact is, it's God's plan, not yours. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. So the only thing you can really do is beseech God every day to guide you in the way that at the end of the day, when you put your head on the pillow, You've recognized and acted on the things he wants you to recognize and act on. But the first step is to give it to God, man. Stop trying to control everything yourself. Number two, practice patience. Don't pray for patience, because buddy, he'll give it to you. He won't give you patience, but he'll certainly load you up with opportunities to be patient. But you got to practice patience, right? A lot of times we as men, we trigger quickly. Be thoughtful in your responses. Truly listen to your children, to your wife, to your neighbor, to your brothers and sisters out into the world. Listen to them. And number three, we have to change the prism that we look through that is leadership. We've been sold for so many years that leadership is domination. Go out there and strangle out the business and take everything you want and go out there and dominate the world. No. God will bless you with what you need and what you have. You just got to go out there with a servant's heart and be prepared to not only honor the people, but honor the blessing.
Okay. But you will not hear God. You will not see God. You will not feel God if you're not intentional about your relationship with God.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing I could say. Like, you know, if you don't open that Bible, if you don't read it at all, if you're not sitting there making time for the creator of the universe,
not listening to some good sermons or some
research. You have to be intentional about it in order to really be able to hear and follow what the Lord's telling you to do.
Like, I'm sunk into a really good sermon series right now, and it's on masculinity, and it's amazing. It's amazing, and I'm really opening my eyes to some things, but I'm very intentional about, I don't want to go define my own masculinity. I want to allow God to define it within me. And in order for me to do that, I have to be very intentional about opening myself up to the guidance of God, to listen to that still small voice, to make sure that I am being the tenets of what he needs me to be, right? Like, that's really the thing. To be truly biblically masculine, you got to give up control.
Well, and you got to set aside kind of worldly ideals about who you are.
Yeah.
That's not what it's about. I can tell you from my own thing. I mean, like, you know, just it's, man, you got to, not that I was eating Cheetos all, I just use that as an example, but like, if you're that guy, maybe
Doritos.
If you're that guy eating a bag of chips, sitting on the couch, and that's all you do. I mean, dude, that's not respecting the temple God gave you. That's not.
Well, this is something I tell people all the time. You know, I hear all these people, they'll say to me, well, I can't work out, or I can't move, or I can't. Dude, God built you to hold the most powerful force ever created, which is the Holy Spirit. It can permeate anything. It can take over a town, a village. It can change the direction of your life within seconds. You got to get past that.
I mean, look, disabilities are aside.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about you had some whatever thing or something going on. And you, I mean, look, you do the best you can.
Yeah.
But that, you know, I mean, that's not what we mean. I'm talking about the guy who's perfectly capable.
Yeah.
And then just doesn't do anything. And I'm not saying you got to go freaking, you know, go to join a gym and do all this other stuff. It's just about not being lazy about it, and making, don't be a glutton,
yeah,
you know, and making better choices about those things to kind of just, because I guarantee you, if you're doing that stuff, then you're not serving. And if you're serving, you don't have time for that stuff, or your mindset's all different places. But
it changes. It will change the way you view those things.
But so, I mean, I would say that for your older guys, it's like, you know, one of the other things to do, if not only is it taking care of your own spirituality, but lifting up someone else, you know, look, you don't have to be a star-studded, you know, pastor or preacher or speaker or whatever. Sometimes a dude just needs another dude to just listen.
Don't quiet your own wisdom. Share.
You never know.
You know, one of the biggest tragedies I see in the modern church is the older generation just doesn't is not engaged with that middle and younger generation. You have so much to offer, so much to give, so much wisdom to impart. Be proud of the fact that you've survived the trials and tribulations and all the things that God's put in front of you, and be prepared to hand that out and say, hey, I got you, man. Here's where I've been. Here's what I know. Hope it helps. Right. Like I, one of the things I really appreciate is when you see a older gentleman in church who is really attempting to engage across the generations. Those are the guys that you're like, that dude's got it right. That dude understands. But you're right. You know, older men, you can't dim your light for any reason, man.
Well, and not just that, but look to it as this. You may be fighting battles right now, tomorrow, a week from now, 10 years from now, but it's already done.
Yeah.
You got to fight from a position of victory. That's really where it is. Even if you lose this battle.
Battle's won.
The victory's done, yeah. You know? So there's that. I would say that, you know, just look at it. For those who are kind of like me and Brian, where you could and have the natural tendency to be like a overbearing buffoon with a true toxic attitude, you know, it's really you got to quiet that ego, and you got to you got to get rid of that pride.
Got to let that go.
It's that's really not helping you at all. That's the very first thing I would advise somebody who thinks they're a tough guy going through something. Because look, there's always somebody tougher. There's always somebody harder.
There's always somebody stronger.
It doesn't matter. So, you know, really, really look at that kind of stuff. There, but you look, the very first thing, look to God first, take care of yourself and where you are as a man, be the husband you're supposed to be from a biblical standpoint, be the dad or the father you're supposed to be from a biblical standpoint, and work on those things in that order.
I think we need to say this though, just as kind of encouragement, you're going to fail.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Give yourself a little grace, because God's going to give you grace. And just.
But if you're not failing, you're not trying.
And own where you screwed up. I've had to apologize to my kids more than once.
Sure.
It is what it is, man. It teaches them that you can be humble, right? So give yourself some grace, because God's going to give you grace. Anyway, sorry, man.
I'm just saying, you know, if you're not failing, you're not trying.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, you're good. I mean, like, you can't do. I teach my girls all this constantly. Don't worry about you screwing up. You're never going to do anything if you don't screw up.
You know, it's when I was in management, I used to tell. You know, I had a conversation with a guy one time, and it was kind of a funny conversation, because he was talking to me about how I had to fire all these people, and I was like, so why are you firing all these people? And he's like, well, they keep screwing up. I was like, so they're trying. And he was like, well, what do you mean? I was like, let me be clear. I would rather have a guy who is falling over himself, failing, but trying every day, than have a guy who's so talented yet lazy that he wins once and stands on the podium for months before he tries to win again. Because the guy who's repeatedly trying and failing, that you keep saying, come on, man, keep climbing. You're going to get there. When he gets it, he'll be your number one.
That's it.
But the guy that already has the talent and knows he can turn it off and on, 9 times out of 10 will be your biggest problem. Because his ego will destroy the environment. And it's the same in your home. Your ego will destroy your environment. So be humble. Keep trying. Keep failing. Keep falling over yourself. It's okay.
We're Army Talks.
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.